Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is the Athletic Football Show.
Welcome to the Athletic Football Show. I'm Robert Mays. Joining me tonight, it's my good friend Nate Tice. Nate, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing very well. I realized, yeah, it is Halloween and we're not dressed up, which I'm fine with, but it was like all of a sudden I was like, I think that's what you're supposed to kind of do on these things, but it's like, hey, it's a podcast. It's not a visual medium except for the people listening right now.
Well, yeah, I was sitting in my house all day. I'm not going to be in a costume all day. That's when people are like, why are you wearing a hat? Or the questions people ask, like, well, I've been, you don't understand the scramble that happens between like when this late games end and when we start this show. So yeah. No, there's no getting ready involved, especially
in our
costumes.
We pray for the Sunday night game to be boring.
Exactly.
We pray for it so we don't have to pay attention.
Today was the first day, first year we've had trick-or-treaters. So I had so much candy in the house because I was ready. I was ready to make those kids happy. I was like, no one is going to go away wanting more candy from this house, which means I have just been eating candy all day. I have eaten so many peanut butter Snickers and Reese's peanut butter pumpkins today, which, by the way, the peanut butter to chocolate ratio on the Reese's shapes is perfect. The cups are too much chocolate. The shapes, though, are amazing, and you just pop them in, and I guarantee you I've eaten at least 50 of them today.
I think it's
so. I have people just take that into account as you listen to me over the next hour.
Because the ridges, I think, just, you know, they take out a little bit of that extra peanut butter to chocolate
ratio. Agree.
I think, and then so you get the full shape no matter what the season is, whether it's like the Easter Bunny or the trees for Christmas. Yeah, so I think that's what it is. So you get the proper fullness. And so I think that's what they intended. And they're just trying to save money in like 1932, like Hershey's was, and they just chopped out that little part. And so like this is their way of giving back in the holiday season.
They're evolving, which they deserve some credit for that. They're getting better. They're progressing.
They had a bye week. They adjusted.
We're putting off the start of the show because I don't know what to talk about after the week that we just watched. Here's my question. After taking in week 8, who's good? Who the hell is good? Especially in a certain conference.
I was just about to say.
With that question kind of lingering over us after another wild, kind of confusing week 8, here's how I wanted to do the first 15. For this show, which is the way that we start off every single show. Like an NFL team has a first 15, our first 15 minutes are how we open things. I want to do power rankings for each conference. I want to do the best 5 teams in the NFC and the AFC and see if we can actually do this because I don't have confidence in our ability to pull this off. Let's start though with the NFC because in my mind, that's much, much easier to do. So
I
why don't
so
you,
too.
After week 8, give me your top 5 NFC teams as you would currently rank them in this very moment.
And I do want to reiterate, me and you have not discussed this.
We have not talked about this at all.
At all. We just knew we're doing top 5. Okay. My number one is the Rams. And that is my number one team overall. And I'll just, spoilers. Number 2, and this was tough because I'm deciding between 2 and 3. Number 2, I have the Bucks. Number 3, I have the Packers. But that one is tight. And then I'll go 4, Cowboys. And I'll go 5, Cardinals. And then if 6 is Saints is the honorable mention. How about you?
This is so fucking annoying. People always complain about how we always agree on everything. And this was a chance for us to disagree about this. I have the exact same 5 teams in that exact same order.
I changed the Packers and Bucks. So maybe that could be our little like discussion friction.
That's so annoying. Okay. Walk me through. All right. Let's start with the Rams.
Okay.
Why do you think that they are just a slight smidge above everybody else in the conference?
I think if you're just talking whole team, they can win in different ways. And also on offense, I really don't think they have limitations. I think I think they keep adding to their offensive repertoire every week. And it's like, oh my God, like what they're doing on offense is so much fun. Just the empty stuff, which we've talked about, but then just everything else they're packaging together. They're starting to get better with the run game as far as putting it more out of the shotgun. And it's like, oh, and this is just every week. They just add a little sprinkle to it. It just like gets better and better and better. And so it's really cool to watch that offense. And defensively, I still think they're with the new defense coordinator, they're kind of figuring out exactly what they want, but it's still good.
It's good enough. I mean, with the offense playing like this, it's more than good enough.
Exactly. And they can create plays, like they can create turnovers, and they can withstand just kind of body blows where they just like, okay, we got beat right there. They adjust to what offenses are doing, which is so important as the season goes along. I just think they're the most complete team in the NFL right now.
I think that's totally fair. So for me, coming into the season, all the enthusiasm about that, my question was, how much better can the offense be if the defense is going to take a step back? Yep. And the step back they've taken is pretty much what I would have expected, right? You go from being the best defense in the NFL to a middle of the pack defense.
Yes.
Could the offense make up for that? The offense has more than made up for that. They're the best offense in the NFL. They're the most efficient offense in the NFL. They're arguably the most explosive offense in the NFL. So they have they've gotten more than enough out of that side of the ball for them to make up in whatever decline they had offensively. So any enthusiasm people had is warranted with this version of what the team looks like. I also have them at number one. I have the Bucs at number two just because I still feel like the Bucs offense is a machine.
Yes.
Like they had a couple hiccups today, but I still feel like that Bucs offense, when it's rolling, the level of talent, how well Brady is playing, that team right now, to me, is just more complete offensively than the Packers are. I have the Packers at three because I was impressed with the way that they played on Thursday. I was impressed that they could win in a different way, right? Yes. I was just very impressed that, all right, we don't have Devontae Adams. Our passing game is broken.
Yeah.
We're going to roll out this offense with two running backs doing two very different things, and that's what we're going to center on. Our offensive line still isn't healthy. They still have a place to go, and I think their defense, they're getting contributions from guys I didn't necessarily expect. So yes. I think they're still – and I think the Bucs defense is going to get healthier. When the Bucs defense gets their guys back in the secondary, I think that's a big thing. But those are my three, and I think the Cowboys are right there.
I do too. I want it, when I was knocking those off, it's not like I said two and three, that's tight, but it's like, it's not like a teardrop. It's like, it's more like just, that's a smat. Those three teams are like all in it together because I think those are all three good teams.
And you think the Cardinals are just a step down from all of those?
Yes. I think they are a good team though. Like they've legitimately, the JJ Watt injury does hurt.
It's the volatility to me. Exactly. I just think that they're so much more volatile than those other four teams. They're just not. When the Packers, even when they were struggling on offense, I still feel like they had a place to go on Thursday night. They could go to certain things. It's like, all right, we're going to run the ball just down your throat. We can be this, even with our offensive line not being at full strength. And that's impressive to me. Cowboys the same way today. It's like, all right, we have some guys that can make plays. Their defense stepped up. And I think the Cardinals are just a little bit more volatile than that. I think the Saints are a step outside of that group. Yes. I think they're right there. I mean, they're probably going to make the playoffs. We'll talk about them here in a minute, but that's my five. That was easy for me to do.
That was. And it's like, and this is the Western Conference because we're about to get into the Eastern Conference of the AFC coming up.
Is a disaster. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm saying that trying to do this exercise for the AFC is miserable. Okay. Yes. Who are your five AFC teams?
Okay. One is Bills. Two is Ravens. All right. And this is where I go askew. I go three. I go Patriots. I go four. Yeah, I knew that would be spicy. Four, I go Titans. And then five, I go Chiefs. But honestly, there could have been about three other teams there.
Who are the other teams?
I went Raiders, Bengals, Chargers after that.
Okay. We have the same top two teams. We have the Bills. Okay. All right. First of all, let's walk through yours. Why do you think the Bills are still number one?
Oh man, honestly, it's like it's hard to say. They are the number one because they're the one team that has shown they can win in different ways. They have shown this defense. I trust this defense. Even if the Titans game, they're not going to play the Titans every week. The Titans are a bad matchup for them, but they're not going to play them every week. They might play them in the playoffs, but it's I think this defense can hang with anybody. Just how they win. They have so many good players. They win by soundness. They make you beat them. And no matter what, they'll be in every game. And offensively, Josh Allen is still Josh Allen doing these things. He is the whole offense. And that's what they've tried to really figure out on offensively. It is disjointed. They're trying to live in the spread world, which does limit some of the stuff they're doing. And I do think these teams that play them often, the teams in their division, the Chiefs, the teams that repeat play them, the Ravens or the Steelers, I'm sorry, other teams that have repeated and play them are starting to have some more answers. So I think really for them, that's hard. This is my number one team, and I'm already talking about stuff that they have to improve upon. The NFC teams, it's like, oh, look at these fireworks. Oh, look at this. Ooh, that's a blue one. That's a red one. This one's like, oh my God, it's like firecrackers just going off. But it's just with this Bills team, it's they can win in different ways. I've seen this offense peak. It's just this offense, I think, is going to be up and down because they're going to have some bad matchups. Just how they want to win the spread. Bunch of little receivers. It's mean how I say that, but they do win against man. They can do that, but it's just how they're built. There are some.
We haven't seen them hit the level they were on last year.
We have not
seen that eruption.
They're winning in different ways.
Yet. Yes, they're winning uglier, and I think that's a good thing. The fact that we haven't seen their offense really hit its stride, and they've still been a top 10 offense by most efficiency metrics, right at the edge of the top 10, but still up there, and they're winning all these games ugly, I think is good. I think that's a sign that if we can win even when things really aren't clicking and the rest of the teams in the conference continue to kind of struggle and flounder in all of these different ways, that's a good sign for us moving forward.
Yeah.
I also have the Ravens at 2.
Okay.
I don't know what my exact reasoning is. Here's my reasoning. I think that of all the players that we're talking about here, of all the units we're talking about here, I still feel really good about the Ravens offense overall because of what Lamar can give them and what the running game is. Even with the concerns about, I mean, their talent at running back right now is so limited and so obvious. Like, you just can't, if we had running back notch higher, that their running game would be supersonic the way that it's been in years past. But it's not that right now. The defense to me still has great games. They can still find great games. I'm still worried about the secondary. I think ultimately it could doom them. But I don't feel that much better about any of the teams behind them. So that's why they're number two. Like, it's not a good argument. I'll admit that it's not a good argument, but I don't have a better argument for anybody else.
It's so funny how you said that. You're like two and I don't feel good about it. Cause it was like, I put them two and I was trying to go sort through this. And I was like, I think, and this is my first note about the Ravens. I go, put the next seven teams in a blender. It's just chaos.
I feel like the same way.
Is. That's what just, whatever. AFCs could be, this is how it is. All these teams are going to sort out as they're getting on buys. And kind of like, some are going to take leave. Some are going to just hang here. This Ravens team, we know what the negatives are. Like you just said, the DBs, the pass coverage is a little dicey week in, week out. It's like, up front, they have kind of some nice pieces and they're doing some good things. And then offensively, we know the offensive line limitations. Like, they're playing better. They are playing better, but
the tackles still concern me, though. That's still not, just in the back of my mind. It's like haunting me. And the corners and the tackles are haunting me. Those are not two spots that you want weak links. And this is a team with weak links at those spots. And it's still the number two team in the AFC.
Yes, I know. And you're like, oh, and that's the thing. It's like Lamar can just go supernova. And then you're like, yep, there they are. That's the Ravens. But it's like, you never know what you're going to get every week.
I don't have the Patriots in my top five. I understand why you put them in there. So I have the Titans at 3.
Okay.
To me, it's just, I think the offense is finding its footing.
Yes.
To me, they have star power. We're going to talk about that. I think AJ Brown being back and looking like AJ Brown is really big for them. They even have Julio today. I think that they're finding themselves offensively. They're going to get better on that side of the ball. Their defense, they have a couple guys who continue to make plays. Harold Landry made plays today. Kevin Byard made plays today. We'll talk about that. So I don't feel good about that. And I have the Chiefs at 4 because I don't feel good about anybody. So I might as well put Mahomes in there.
That's it. I'm never betting against them. So it's like, all right, I got to throw them somewhere.
Even if they have the worst defense in the league, and we're confident they're going to have the worst defense in the league, in my mind, in a different world, let's say we're in a place where the Ravens are more complete, where the Browns are the team we thought they were coming into the season, where the Chargers aren't having some of these issues offensively, then this version of the Chiefs wouldn't deserve to be in this conversation.
Correct.
We wouldn't be talking ourselves into, oh, well, the turnovers have come back to earth. They still move the ball. There's no way this turnover differential and this turnover rate can continue. And when that normalizes, even if the defense is bad, they'll be fine. I wouldn't be doing that if I thought there were serious roadblocks from other teams in the AFC, but I don't feel that way. So that's why it's easy to talk myself into putting them in this group, even with the way that they played and even with what their record is.
Yeah. And it's like, even the other teams I was like considering, like, okay, Raiders. Okay. But they just literally fired their head coach. And it's like, yes, they're improving, but that team has its blemishes too. I just think they haven't played anyone that's really like kind of abused with their, with some of the stuff they do defensively and stuff like that. So it's like, I'm the same way you are. My only note I had for the Chiefs was just like, I'm not betting against Mahomes. I'm not betting against this team that has proven that they can do this. And I get it. The defense is atrocious. But it's like, they improved the last week they played. They're playing tomorrow night. I think they might just blow them out of the water. And we just go, oh, yeah, that's right. They can do that.
We keep saying that, though, and then it doesn't happen. But
again, I even bet on it on a Friday show, too.
If there was a different situation, if there was the landscape of the conference was different, I wouldn't be making such a simplistic argument. I wouldn't be going back to this well. So I had the Chiefs at 4. I had the Bengals at 5. But to me, whatever. You could have the Bengals there. You could have the Chargers there.
Yeah.
I think the Browns are still probably somewhere in the conversation. We'll get to them. They're not playing very well, especially on offense. But I do think it's so muddled that you can put a bunch of teams there. Why do you have the Patriots as high as you do?
From what we've done on the Friday shows, we have now watched the Patriots a lot. And it's like what they're doing, they're hanging with good teams. Not only just like the Cowboys and stuff like that. I think they are improving week in, week out. Their defense is kind of, they're not doing anything that Bill Belichick has never done before, but the pressures they're bringing are different as opposed to maybe doing their all mugged up. Oh, the Sam Darnold seeing ghost kind of pressures. They're doing just the one-off ones where just one guy comes. They're playing the man
from different places too, from the slot sometimes, from the linebacker spot sometimes.
Yes. They had a real fun one. We'll talk about in a sec, but the drop eight stuff, like, and then just offensively, I think they're figuring it out. Like Mac Jones was pushing the ball and every week he pushes the ball just a little bit more. And that was my main blemish with him. And it's like, okay, cool. Like they're, yeah, the guys aren't super explosive, but they do enough. It's a nice, you know, nice mixing of role players. But I could see that offense just improving week in, and especially with the offensive line getting healthier as well.
It's just hard for me to buy into their ceiling. I mean, just think about the playmaking talent that some of these other teams have, and they just don't have that. You know, when they need something, when they need an explosive play, when they need somebody just to kind of be above and beyond, I just don't know who that is on their roster. And I just think that their ceiling offensively is limited in ways that other teams in this conversation aren't. I don't know what to make of the Bengals. I mean,
I don't either.
It's such a confusing time for every single team in the AFC. I think that's why we want to do this, because it's really hard to sort through them. The question I want to ask you, though, how many teams in the AFC would be the second best team? How many teams in the NFC would be the second best team in the AFC?
Four.
I think it's four.
Yeah, everybody that the
Bucks, Packers, Cowboys, Cardinals would all be the second best team in the AFC.
Yep, I agree with that. It's the Eastern Conference. I mean, that's what it is this year. It's
the NFC playoffs are going to be a bloodbath.
Oh, I know.
Every single game is going to be incredible.
It's going to be awesome. Oh, every matchup is just going to be like none of those like just blowouts were no offense, but like the Saints Bears game last year where you're like, oh, I know how this one's going to finish up.
I'm sure that these lists will not look ridiculous in 2 weeks when we have do this again. I'm sure that these will hold up extremely well because it's been a very predictable, normal season where everything has happened about on schedule and about the way we assumed it would.
Exactly. Everything is just, you know, trajectory straight upwards. That's how it is week in, week out.
All right. It's time to talk about the things that grabbed our attention this week. Let's get to You Have My Attention.
Gentlemen, you have my curiosity, but now you have my attention.
We all know during an NFL Sunday, just a wall of stuff coming at you. And sometimes it's hard to pick out what mattered, what didn't. Every week we like to go through 3-4 things that just kind of made us stand up and take notice during a Sunday, during an afternoon. And I want to start with the New Orleans Saints defense, a unit that we talked about coming into the week and one that made enough plays against an offense that we love with the Bucs to come up with a huge win.
Yes. And it's one of those where it's like, yes, we didn't jinx them, because it was like, yes, there we go. We covered a team and they played great. I mean, we've done it before, but it was interesting to see. I last week, starting with the Manning cast, when Tom Brady goes, yeah, play man against us. We'll see what happens. And then I said on Friday, I was like, yeah, I'll be curious if they do it. The Saints are playing some man. We'll see if they keep it. They did it. They did it. And the results We're good and bad with it. It's the results which you expect when you play man coverage against Tom Brady in the Tampa Bay Bucks offense. And like, that's why Chris Godwin went off. It's hard to keep up with him in the slot play after play after play. But man, they were just doing a nice mix up of stuff. And that's how you have to beat good quarterbacks. You have to mix up what you run. It's really hard to do the Seahawks of the 2010s where you just run the same shit every play. It just is. So you have to have really good players. So like with this Bucks, or I'm sorry, with the Saints defense, sometimes bringing the pressure, sometimes going man, sometimes just going spot drop, sometimes going drop eight, you know, just, you know, making them just go, oh shoot, one to two to three, and getting pressure when they only bring four guys. That also
helps. Or three,
the strip sack on top of it against a Bucks O-line that can kick a lot of teams' asses week in, week out. It's like that really does something. And just how aggressive they were today, like the pick on the ball going to Tyler Johnson. Who was that? Gardner Johnson.
CJJ, yeah.
Yeah.
CGJ.
CGJ.
Yeah.
CGJ. Yeah, Gardner Johnson picked off when he was covering Tyler Johnson. But it was like on that one, it was like just a nice like little headiness, and as well as just like the aggressiveness and playing man coverage against this Bucks offense. It was a 4-1.
You got to make a play. You have to make a play. Against this team that if every once in a while, you're going to have to make a play.
Take it.
That was not a bad breed by Brady. They were in man coverage. Yep. It had cleared out. He threw it exactly where he wanted to, and he just made a play. He's like, I'm falling off this, and I'm making a play. And it's funny because it's such an interesting contrast. Early in the game, Godwin had that huge reception, and I think it was a third down where he just roasted at him on a jerk route. Yep. And that's going to happen against this team, right?
Yep.
Like Brady threw four touchdowns. There were some explosive plays. There was one, the long touchdown to Cyril Grayson at the end. That's a situation where I think the Saints are doing some of that cover seven stuff where it's very rules heavy, right? Yep. Like the numbers and how you count it and everything else is very rules heavy. They had a bunch. They switched release and there was a miscommunication.
Yep.
Lattimore went with Evans because he was number one, and then number three went vertically, and that's going to happen against this team. The Bucs are very smart and they have very good players. So every once in a while, they're going to beat you. But you need to make plays. You need to go above and beyond every once in a while. And that's exactly what he did there. And yep. I think that's a perfect example. I want to talk about two third and sixes on two consecutive drives in the second quarter. You've kind of alluded to them. You were third and six with 14-15 in the second quarter. They lined up in that dime look that I was talking about on Friday that I love. Three defensive linemen, linebackers mugged up. They bring five, but neither of the linebackers come. The slot comes and the safety on the other side comes. Davis books it underneath Godwin. Quan Alexander gets 10 yards of depth to get underneath Evans. And Brady does not expect this. There's pretty sticky coverage on the right side where he went with the ball with Cameron Brate against the corner on that side. Incompletion, drive over. So you have total miscommunication, confusion. Don't know where guys are coming from. You only bring five.
Yeah.
But you don't know which five are coming.
Yes.
Drive over. Later that quarter, third and six again. They drop eight. So they have the same look. They only bring three. Cam Jordan walks Tristan Wirfs, who's pretty damn good, into Brady and uses the right tackle to make Brady fumble, strip sack, drive over, turnover. So exact same situation, exact same look, two very, very different approaches. And that's what you have to do against Tom Brady.
Yes.
And it's just a perfect encapsulation of why this defense is a problem.
Yeah. And not even just like, I mean, those are awesome examples because it's like they didn't play scared. Like a lot of times it's hard. It's hard. And I this is easy for me to say it sitting here, but it's like, it really is hard to like go against these like good offenses, good defenses, just go, you got to take it to them. You got to, you know, block it up and go at them. But it's like, no, or on the flip side, it's like, no, you got to blitz them. You got to vary up the looks. And it's like, but that's what the Saints defense did. And they, like you said, they took their punches. Like Godwin went off. Like it's hard to keep up with this team play after play. But it was like when they had an opportunity to take advantage, they did. And also just, the last pick six too. It's like you asked me on Friday too. You're like, what is that kind of Greg Williams defense? And because that's what, you know, Dennis Allen has some roots in, and like they'll vary it up. So it was like the robber stuff. They're reading a lot of the quarterback stuff. They're getting the quarterback to do, anticipating what he wants to do and taking advantage of it. And on that last pick six, it was like Aikman kept saying, oh, that's two man. It was almost like a four man where the safeties are driving. because they're trying to hit on those overs. And it's taking advantage.
Well, that's the thing. Every time they play too high, it's aggressive against the Bucks. They're cutting that stuff off. Yes. Yep.
They say, oh, you want to hit those overs? Nope, you're not getting those overs. They're making you go outside, outside, outside. And that's hard to win outside. By the fourth quarter, the Mike Evans touchdown, Brady, there was a man look. Like, he could have read it out and like beaten Bama that. And he said, screw it. I'm just going to my ex on the deep seven route, on a deep corner route. And so that's what he did. That's what they're forcing Tom Brady to do. They said, screw reading this out, this high low on the man. I'm just going to take my one-on-one and just going to go with that. But that's like speaking to the defense that you're making him shortcut stuff. It worked out. Don't get me wrong. It was Mike Evans touchdown, but you showed that Tom Brady just said, screw it. He was hitting that button by the end of the game.
Well, it's interesting because that was a 3-man rush. The reason he had time to get to that, because they only brought three guys. So eventually, by making things hard, by being a little bit hard to predict, you're going to put yourself in bad spots every once in a while. But you have to take chances. Sometimes you're going to have to drop three because you're going to get one every once in a while.
Yep.
The other thing I wanted to talk about just very quickly, the play before the strip sack. There was a TFL. It was a small play. It was a subtle play. But Montrevis Adams and Carl Granderson just destroyed the right side of the Bucs offensive line and made a play about 2 yards deep in the backfield on 2nd and 6. And that's the other thing about this defense. We know it's Mario Davis. We know Marshawn Lattimore. We know the stars, right? Cam Jordan made a huge play in this game. They play with a uniform mentality, especially up front. And you feel that. And it's guys like Montrevis Adams and Carl Granderson and Shy Tuttle getting a key holding penalty called against him. That's what makes this defense great. And that's what you saw from them today. And I think if we kind of zoom out a little bit, this is a reminder of just how well-rounded this team is and why they're a pain in the ass to play against. Even if there was sort of a talent purge over the last couple of years just because of cap realities, and even if they're not as deep, and even if they do have some more defined holes where Kevin White's having to catch 50-yard bombs in this game.
And freaking out after.
I would too if I were Kevin White. And that is a new reality for this team, but the reality that's transitioned over is that they're still really well coached and they still have a lot of dudes on the defensive side of the ball.
Yes.
The sad thing for me now is there was a world where Jameis making the throw he makes to Tre'Quan Smith, right? It's a great ball. Yeah. It's a great throw. Like, he's aggressive. That's what their offense has been, their passing game this year. They don't throw it a lot, but they'll get those chunks because he's willing to take them. Now, what does it look like? Because there was a path for them to be an annoyance in the NFC playoff race, and they're most likely going to get one of those wild card spots. With Jameis removed from the equation, which it sounds like he will be, now what does it look like? What does it look like with Taysom Hill? I don't really trust Trevor Siemian long term. I don't know how many roughing the passer calls you're going to get in key moments as we move forward.
He's taking charges, man. He's taking charges.
That's the bummer for me, is because I think that Sean Payton was doing an unbelievable job.
Yeah.
And the overall staff was doing an unbelievable job. And now I just think the path forward is much more difficult with concerns about who your quarterback is going to be.
Absolutely. I know. Just as you're starting to feel good about what the Saints were doing, it's like Jameis goes down and you're like, we might have done the top five. And you're like, okay, maybe. But it's like now that kind of like, it's hard. Like you just say, it's hard to kind of like fully go like, oh yeah, this team, but they can make some noise, or not make some noise, but they can be feisty. It's really hard to go against this defense. That's like you said, has a mentality of just ass kickers. Like, that's what they are. They just have that mentality of like, we're going to take your head off. But they do it in a very intelligent way. It's really fun to watch.
Well, speaking of that, let's get to the Patriots defense, which also kind of garnered our attention.
Top three in AFC, baby.
For the second year in a row, they gave Justin Herbert a lot of trouble. Another tough day for the Chargers offense. He had a negative 12.4 completion percentage over expectation today. Oof. It was the third worst mark of the week. Rodgers was second worst. I mean, the passing game for the Packers was not good. Darnold was the worst. So, it's fine. But it was not a good day for the Chargers. And I think that a lot of credit deserves to be given to the Patriots defense and kind of how they went about this.
Yeah, against the Cowboys. Cowboys ran a couple four strong concepts. I've said this like three times in the last couple of weeks.
Explain what that is.
Okay, four strong concept is you have four routes working to one side. Most route concepts are 3-by-2, you know, or you're going to isolate two on the outside and have three in the middle, kind of like as a triangle, inside triangle read. A four strong concept is usually like a 3-by-1 concept, a three strong, but you just add one more. And more offenses are doing this just to overload a side, break defensive rules, make their guys communicate, especially with jet motions. The Patriots, I've talked about the Belichick defense, and it's very rule oriented, and they do such a good job with it. But how you kind of get them off put a little bit is kind of just breaking their rules, run unusual concepts, unusual formations, or run usual concepts from unusual formations or unusual looks. Mm-hmm. But against the Cowboys and the Saints, actually, the Patriots were facing these four strong concepts, and the Cowboys got them a couple times. It was a drive concept, and drive is a crosser with a dig behind it. It's a little high-low concept you can do, and they got them like three times with it. And I was like, oh, man, wow, Patriots didn't have answers. Wow, that's curious. Not really used to seeing that from Bill Belichick. Chargers come out first, third down, four strong, try to run a drive concept. There's Kyle Van Noy working from the line of scrimmage, just waiting for Austin Eckler, just like, you coming on a crosser? Come on over, buddy.
It's a great, great example because that ball should have been caught.
Yes.
But it wasn't easy. They made everything hard today. And you can look at that play and you can think, oh, that's off his hands. Like, come on now. But every single thing was a tight window throw. Everything needed to be earned by that Chargers offense today. Yes. And I thought that that's a perfect example. I had that written down as well. Yeah. And I thought there were several moments today. We talked about last week. I was looking for it today because of it, talking about just the inefficiency on early downs from the Chargers and how much their play action game was affected by that. Multiple times today where they're just getting blown up on play action on early downs.
I know.
And it was a couple different times. And this is a couple different things. So second and 10, with 4:22 left in the first quarter. They run a boot concept. They leave Judon unblocked, which is normal, right? By the way, some people were trying to gaslight me today, talking about boot stuff with Justin Fields. Be like, the reason that the Bears weren't using boots before is they didn't trust their right tackle because the third string right tackle. First of all, it was one game. Second of all, you don't block the end man on the line of scrimmage when you boot. It's the right tackle doesn't seal anything. I was like, am I taking crazy pills? What are you talking about?
Bootlegs, like the blocking, I've said this before, but they're called elephants on parade because the offensive line just get to hang out. They just gotta trot to the one direction together.
The right tackle has nothing to do with sealing the backside in a boot. Nothing. You can seal it with someone else. Yeah. You can have someone coming across. There are plenty of ways to do it. The right tackle is not involved. I was like, am I losing my mind? Anyway. So they lead Judon unblocked because that's what you do when you're booting back to the right. But the right tackle doesn't sell it at all. Norton takes one step and then sets up, right? You got to wash that thing down. Second, Herbert takes a step and a half acting like he's going to hand off before he pulls the ball away. Judon sees it. He sees him pull the ball. So obviously he's screaming toward the quarterback. He's in his face instantly. Play gets blown up. Later in the third quarter, first and 10 play action, they have Cook on the left side. Judon just crashes inside. Cook does not seal him off. It's another play action throw where as soon as Herbert's head is around, there's somebody in his face. That's the Chargers not executing in those moments. Little details from them are frustrating. Yep. They are not as precise on offense as I would want them to be. And I think that that's just one of their issues. But when you have defensive players and a defense like the Patriots that's going to consistently take advantage of that, you see performances like today. If you give them a window, if you give them those inches consistently, they're going to take them. They're very well coached and they're very good. And I think they did that consistently today.
And the Patriots are a defense because they're so well coached and they do all the studies more than anybody. That's what they're famous for is self-scouting and opponent scouting is that offense that can sometimes telegraph what they want to do. And like the Chargers do vary up their looks, but then there's times where it's like, well, it's hip slot. Here comes a play action. You know what I mean? It's like you can. This is a
which that was the Cook play. That's exactly what they were in. There's both tight ends to that side.
Yeah, and also other things too is by our frustration a little bit sometimes with this Chargers offense is, or mine too is quick game and quick game is fine, but they have a, you know, sometimes a little too much desire to run it a little. But they lean on it a little bit too much more than I would like with a quarterback like Justin Herbert that could push the ball, and you know what the Patriots did today? They dropped eight, and dropping eight is a great counter for quick game because you just put bodies in the lane. It's like playing against a 2-3.
You have to be precise. And they are not precise right now.
You have to beat where, and if you don't know where, especially where that eighth dropper is coming from, whether it's the edge or if it's a D tackle or if it's a linebacker or whatever it is on the personnel, it can really mess with those quick game. Cause you're like, okay, I'm throwing stick here. Why is the end go underneath there? Oh shoot. And guess what? Quick game is very quick 1-2. And then you have to scramble and break contain. That's why Herbert, you saw a couple times, like trying to create a throw is because that, it gets squeezed. And that's what you have to do. You have to create a throwing lane. Dak did a great job of it a couple of weeks ago or last week, but, or yeah, a couple of weeks ago. Oh my God, it's all blending together, but it's, but that's today is what happened. It was just, it was very hard. It was like they telegraphed what was going on.
Totally.
Just knew what was coming. And just kind of like, it was a great game plan. It really was.
A lot of balls just getting deflected off hands, but yeah, defensively, offensively. But again, that's just a lack of space to work with. They did it consistently. They brought pressures in the right moments. They had one that was beautiful where they brought 40. I don't know what 41's name. I'm getting so old and washed. They brought him off the slot.
I have it.
When Judon crashed inside, it was about halfway through the third quarter. It was a 3rd and 8. And that's the type of stuff they were doing. They didn't bring a ton of heat in this game, but they varied up the looks enough to make them really uncomfortable.
Miles Bryant.
Miles Bryant. There you go.
I had it. It was a 3-by-1 bunch. Yep. 3rd and 8, third quarter. Yeah. And oh my God, the disguise on this one was awesome. I think I tabbed this, so I wanted to write about it because it was like they hid the safety backside and the other safety was like not, when you bring slot pressure, the safety will kind of cap the top of the slot guy. Yeah. Patriots, like
that's how you identify it, right?
Yep. Yeah. And if you looked at this one, you would go, they're not bringing it. They're stacked. Both of the guys
came really late.
Late and way out. Like they were. He hit it because a lot of times those slot pressure guys will start cheating, especially against a bunch, because they're like, oh, I got to get inside the receiver so I can hit this lane. He stayed and hung. He kind of gave it away a little bit about the I'm not coming. And you just stare straight at the receiver in front of him, you know, where they almost go cross-eyed because they're like, I'm not blitzing. I swear. But that's what he did. But it was great. And that when you got guys like, I have to look up his name again, even though it's right in front of me, Miles Bryant, number 41. When you have a DB wearing 41 making plays like this, that really helps.
I also was impressed. Christian Barmore had some plays today. Him and Judon working little games on that against the right side of the Chargers offensive line. That's an advantage for the Patriots. And they consistently took it. They consistently took advantage of it. That was this type of game where when they gave New England an inch, they took a mile. Yeah. New England's offense did not look great. Like it was a kind of an up and down performance from them. They needed defensive plays. They needed a great performance on that side of the ball. And they got it. So now Patriots are 4-4. You have them as the third best team in the AFC.
I guess. Yeah.
I mean, in a world where this is, it's so muddy, they suddenly become pretty interesting.
I know. I couldn't believe I put them at 3, and I was like, yeah, I like of all those teams we talked about, it's like, I can just talk myself into them the most. Cause it's like, I see them playing good ball and it's like, I see a path where they can keep getting better. And that's what you want to see from a team at week 8 right now.
Now, and they have the tiebreaker over the Chargers now. And all those, I mean, those teams kind of bunched together there with 3 losses, 4 losses. I can understand how you can talk yourselves into them. All right, let's get to our next one here. AJ Brown, you have my attention.
Oh, boy.
10 catches, 155 yards, and a touchdown. Here's why it mattered to me today, and here's why I wanted to point this out. I thought that today was a day where the Titans' star power really shined through. They didn't play well. They were down 14-0. They had some really bad turnovers. They had, I mean, also some bad breaks, multiple deep pass interference penalties again for the Colts. It's the best thing they do on offense.
It's a great offense. And the Eagles still do it too. So it must just be something in the water in Philly.
So it's this very uneven day for the Titans, and they leaned on their best players. The touchdown that AJ Brown scored is, to me, like the perfect AJ Brown play. Super, super heavy. He's the only receiver on the field.
Yeah,
he's working outside against the corner. Very physical, gets some separation, but then in this tightrope walk down the sideline, manages to turn what should be just like a 10-yard, 12-yard catch into a 57-yard touchdown because he's gone. And that's what he does. And I think you saw today the type of complete player that he is. And like I mentioned before, that's what this team has, right? Like even if we have a little bit of concerns about their defense overall and the holes they have in the secondary, Byard sealed the game today. He's been great this year. Harold Landry had a drive-ending sack today on a stunt where he's just as a looper to make him just explosive on a stunt to like finish off a drive. That's what they have right now. They have like 6 to 8 guys that are really, really good players, and they're showing up for them right now. For them to win this game when they were down 14-0 and when Derrick Henry averaged 2.6 yards per carry, that's impressive to me.
I said I had a note. I said it's the brute force offense because it's just our best players get the ball and then we just spam the hell out of it. It's like when you create a player in a video game, like in Madden or NCAA, and you're like, my guy's winning the Heisman. So I'm going to make sure he just gets 35 targets every single game. That's what this offense does. And it's like, yeah, that's go for it. If you can do it, go for it, because that's what offense, that's what good football is, right? It's just taking advantage of matchups. And really, that's what AJ Brown is becoming more. Even in my head, sometimes I'm like, oh, he's the inbreaker runner. He catches yak. And then he just goes in and he goes after that. But he's becoming such a complete receiver.
I totally agree.
It's just, man, like just today, we look at his catches. He had a field out versus press man, you know, for the touchdown. He has a dig from the number two spot against press man. So he has an inbreaker and an outbreaker right there, both versus press man. He has a short comeback from the outside. So he's running comeback routes now. You know, he has the out from the slot against press man, against naked. Like, he's winning from the outside and inside, giving you yak ability afterwards. And then he's already had proof this year where he's, you know, dunking on guys in the red zone on fade balls. Okay, that's a complete receiver. Like, it's like, I mean, that's literally all three levels. He can create yak and he can win in the red zone. That's a complete receiver right there. And he can block because he's big. It's like the only comparison I have for him, because it's so hard receiver wise, is more like Charles Barkley in basketball, where it's just like, you know, when Charles Barkley would get a rebound and just barrel down that's what he is with the ball in his hand. He's just a force of nature that plays bigger than what he is. That's what AJ Brown is.
I'm so glad you mentioned the slot stuff and where he was lining up, because he's just attacking teams from everywhere. When we did our
the uptick.
You saw that at the end of last year when he was working against Marlon Humphrey in that wild card game.
Yeah.
Did our non-quarterback draft earlier this year, I had him in like the top five. It was based on that game. It's like, this is where we saw him going, where his ability to kind of do all of these very refined, nuanced receiver things from every single alignment, combined with this force of nature ability that he has, makes him terrifying. And I think that you saw that today. And I am glad that we have the full version of AJ Brown back after what the start of the season looked like. The other guy I wanted to
injuries.
Yeah, and yes, whatever. Going to Chipotle and hamstring injuries. I want all of that out of my life. I want this guy every single week. The other guy I wanted to mention was Keith Carter. If we're talking about people to mention people to pay attention with the Titans, he's their offensive line coach.
Yeah.
And the reason I wanted to mention him is because this team has gotten really good play out of David Quisenberry as their full-time right tackle this year. He played 6 games last year as a starter because they were hurt along the offensive line last year. But we never talked about it. Yeah. We never mentioned how many issues they had and the rotating door they had at tackle last year, because it was never a problem. The fact that this team has just gotten consistent play from whoever they seem to put out there over the last few years and has survived offensive line injuries in the way that they have, I think that's really impressive. That's a topic of conversations for most teams when they have to endure those sorts of injuries. It has not been with them. And Quisenberry is just somebody I noticed again today. It's like, God, he's playing pretty well. And the fact that they're just throwing him there, and they have a guy they drafted in the first round at that spot, it flames out and we don't talk about it because it's not a weakness for them, I think is a testament to how they've been able to develop that group as a whole.
Especially how down the field they attack.
Yes.
It's not like they're running quick game, 20 snaps a game. And so the ball gets out. That's why they don't have any pressure. It's like, no, they attack down the field. So I completely agree. I think, that's such a great point, because it's just, we do not talk about when they've had injuries. Tyler Lewan's been banged up. I mean, it's just like, they're still like, they managed to get that stuff done. It's like, that's supposed to be a star for them. Like you just said, it's just like, and they get these guys that just come in and play well. And they don't all have to be stars, but they just play competently. And that speaks to coaching. When everyone has good eyes, backups are coming in and they know what to do. They're pointing. Usually that's good coaching going on.
I mean, that game against Buffalo where he went out and they kept just rolling on the ground. Oh. That is very impressive. That is something a lot of teams cannot pull off.
Yeah.
All right. Are you ready? It's time to talk about the man this week. It is time for the State Farm Surprising a Great Performance of the Week, presented by State Farm. There's only one way we can go with this, man.
Only
Mike
one
White,
way.
Take a bow.
Take a bow, Mike White. What the hell was that? Like,
I loved it. I don't know what it was, but I absolutely loved it. I don't think anyone expected a guy with no career starts to come in and light up a defense that tormented Lamar Jackson last week.
And just toss up 4 bills, you know, 400 yards. Yeah, why not? Like, sure, why not? See what happens when you play Denzel Mims. You know, this is the good things that happen.
You're playing the long game here. Big time payoff for you down the road.
I'm going to get there.
So I was looking at the numbers, and before I dug back into the game, I looked at the numbers initially. It was 3.67 air yards per attempt, okay? 277 of his yards came after the catch. 20% of his throws traveled over 10 yards in the air. So when I saw that, as I was rewatching the first quarter, I was like, oh, well, you know, maybe this is just not as impressive as the numbers would have you believe. Were there a lot of screens? Were there a lot of yak throws? Yes. He also made half a dozen throws in this game that won them the game. This isn't an upset where, oh, you know, the Bengals got in a hole early and everything went wrong. It wasn't like that at all. They were winning by 11 points with 7 minutes left in this game. This could have gone up in smoke, and it didn't, because the Jets offense continued to make plays.
And that's what exactly what you're saying right now is that, like, it's not like it was like, oh, screens, and then it's like, oh, 350 yards was just screens, and it was like a 90-yard catch and run, missed tackle. It's like everything he was throwing was like on time. Like, totally. he was going high low on stuff, and it was like all like in rhythm. And that's why the backs had so much great room to operate. Shout out to Michael Carter, a draft favorite. But it was like working underneath, it was because he was letting the Bengals defense sink. And so they were sinking, and then you just find it underneath because he was willing to work downfield. And it wasn't like he was just checking it down, because then he was hitting seam balls. He hit some digs, and then also
two in breakers late in the second half, just ripping them. He had the glance to Mims, I believe. And then he had another in breaker to Crowder, where he's just letting that thing rip. Yep. I was like, okay, all right, foot, Mike White.
I know, the eyes going to the right spot. I was like, sweet. Like, he had a naked going to the left, and you could see him, because nakeds is just the 1 to 2 to 3, you know, underneath, mid, deep. And he's just going 1, 2, 3, and he hits the over coming back. And I was like, good for you, man. Working to your left. Like, you could do that, I guess. Like, where the hell did this come from? But, you know, the players played well, but it was the fact that they could run what they wanted to run. They were going like 989 with him. Like, the pick six, he's trying to check it down. Oh, it wasn't a pick six, I'm sorry, but the tip ball that turned into the interception. Mm-hmm. It's 989. He's trying to work it, and he checks it down, and he just gets tipped up. But it's like the process was all good.
Yeah.
It was just bad luck. So it's not even like it was like, wow, he got lucky the whole day. The Berrios throw was awesome as well.
Oh, what a play.
What a throw. Like, back trotting left and whips it left. And
wait, just against
like
pressure. They brought six guys on that play. He needed to throw it off his back foot.
Time.
Incredible ball placement. And that was right after the play before he threw that missile to Keelan Cole. That Keelan Cole caught with one hand. By the way, I've had this conversation before. I think Brandon Lloyd is the answer, but I want somebody to do a deep dive on the best ratio in NFL history of just insane catches to total catches. Like, how many of your catches are all-time highlights? Keelan Cole's in the top five. Like, every fifth Keelan Cole catch is the best play any other receiver has ever made in their entire life. That was an incredible play. He stabbed it with one hand for a touchdown and just happened to lose control as he was coming to the ground.
I know.
But on the next play, on the next play, he throws a dart to Berrios at the pylon with pressure in his face.
And it was like, that's a big boy throw.
Yes.
That's like, you have to make those throws. That's the red zone. They're going to heat you up. You have to, the receiver has to win against man, but then you have to throw it to a spot. And he's going left and he did it. It was like, sure, way to go, Mike White. And it was like, yes, other players played well. Like, Michael Carter did have a nice game. Like, and like you said, the Cole catch.
Ty Johnson's touchdown was awesome.
Nice play. Yeah. And it's like, yes, they did well. But, I mean, he was doing stuff that was letting his players, like, make plays. And as a quarterback, if you're not going to be the star, even though he threw for four Bills and whatever today, if you're not going to be the guy, it's like letting your players be unlocked, letting your teammates do what they are good at with the ball in their hands. That's being a good quarterback. It's like, hey, I'm going to get the ball out. I'm going to put it in the spot to let you make a play and go. Hey, they won the game. He played legitimately well. It wasn't just like a pure luck fest the entire day.
I totally agree. I went back and watched. I was very impressed. I was much more impressed than I expected to be.
I know.
So now
I single screened that game for a while. Like, I just like, I turned it, I had red zone on my computer there on my monitor here, and I just single screened it, put it on.
I went back and watched every Mike White throw today, and I left feeling very differently than I might have expected coming into it. So now, I don't think Robert Saleh did himself any favors with how he handled this. What's after the game. I don't know what the question was. Pulling these quotes one at a time piecemeal is sometimes difficult, but him saying that you never rule anything out when it comes to what Mike White's status is going to be for the long term when you draft a guy second overall. I think we know, but what a great moment for Mike White. For as long as he's going to be the quarterback, I don't know. It's worth getting excited about if you're a Jets fan. Like, this is something. This was very fun, and now you get a national spotlight for Mike White on Thursday night. We know he's going to start again.
This is where all comes crashing down. No, it's, I mean, I love the game ball afterwards. You can tell the team is fired up for him. And it's like, that's, it's cool. It really is. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know about throwing some gasoline on the QB controversy fire for whatever reason with your rookie quarterback who's been struggling with doing all the things we just said Mike White was doing.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, we're not even halfway home and they got that going for them. So let's go for it.
A great moment for the Jets somehow is complicated. All right, guys. Remember, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Get a quote today.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers? That's the butterfly effect for
real. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Why don't you explain this to me like I am an 8-year-old?
All right. Every week, we like to talk about something that needs some explanation, something that teams struggle, a unit struggle. It's like, kind of, tell me more about this. Like, how did this actually happen? This was hard to come up with one this week, I'll be honest, because a lot of the teams that fell flat, we expect to fall flat. I don't need to pile on the Falcons at this stage of things. We don't need to talk about the Lions getting blown out by the Eagles, right? Maybe the Vikings might have been the answer to this if we hadn't planned the show before the Sunday night game. But the thing I landed on, just because of the expectations we have for this team, is something that we've talked about a decent amount on the show this year. And that's the Browns offense, right? Yeah. The Browns offense scores, let me look at the number here, which I don't have in front of me. The Browns offense scores 10 points against the Steelers. They lose a game 15-10. This is not the type of team we expected Cleveland to be coming into the season, right? And Baker Mayfield played okay, but I just didn't expect it to look this hard for the Browns offense consistently. When you watch them, it just feels disjointed. It feels difficult. The Steelers defense deserves a lot of credit for that. We'll get into some of those examples, but I just felt disappointed again watching them today. It's like, man, this team is 4-4. They're struggling. I don't really think they have a clear path out of this. Odell Beckham is just a non-factor. They look sloppy at times. I don't know what their offensive identity is. Like, they lack flexibility. With the way we talk about other teams and why we think the Bills are the best team in the AFC, or why we talk about those NFC teams in these glowing terms, is because, you know what? We can pivot to this. If we can't do this, then we can do that. And I just don't feel that way about Cleveland's offense right now. And I don't know how to pinpoint exactly why that is, but that's just the overall sense I get when I watch them.
It's anytime they're on offense and they're not in heavy personnel, you're just like, ugh.
Yeah. When they're spread out, it's like, yick.
Yick. Yeah, exactly. And that's what you're saying about pivoting to win. That is being a true contender. Not just like, oh, we might make the playoffs, but like a true Final Four team is how we have to find a different way to win no matter what the circumstances are, because the weather's not always going to be perfect. The refs aren't going to be always going your way. You're not going to be catching every ball. The blocks aren't going to be always there. You're not always going to be healthy. And that's what just this offense just has like no synergy. It's like run game wise. It's like, yes, it all makes sense when they're in 12 and 13 personnel. Yes, we love it. It looks great. And then as soon as they get into 11 personnel or they start going spread, when it's not the heavy personnel spread where they can get a defensive base, like their kryptonite is sub defensive personnel. As soon as the defense gets a nickel, they're like, we're screwed. Like we, and it's kind of weird. It's like you, oh, well, okay. Well, Landry's been hurt, but he's getting healthy. Okay. We got OBJ. He can win one-on-ones, but then if you want to run a quick game, you can't run anything over the short area over the middle. The ball's not going to get completed because Baker's not good at those. Baker is, I'm going to make the joke again. He's Russ without the athleticism. That's that little area of the field is dead. So what's OBJ best at? Slants. In breakers where he can run and get away from guys. Baker's not good at throwing those. Baker is an out ball thrower. He is a deep curl, out route, corner ball thrower because he has to see it outside. And so this team is so game script dependent. And that's just kind of what the path they're on right now. And it's kind of, it sucks because you love the line when they're healthy and like you like a lot of the pieces, but then it's just like they're just so limited as soon as they have to drop back and pass. As soon as they have to just do anything that's like working the middle of the field, it just feels like it's so, so hard.
I totally agree. And I think that when you watch them, part of me, especially on third down, when you're sitting there, and again, against the Steelers, maybe this isn't the best answer, but just overall, it's like I want to see a stack or a bunch or something.
Yeah.
Where it's just, but my thought is, and this is just me reading into it, I think they believe he needs it spread out so he can see it. And so if your quarterback needs to see this a certain way, and that doesn't allow you to create separation for your receivers, you kind of run into this static world on third down where it just feels so stagnant and flat all the time. And that's what it felt like again today. And then you combine that with them getting whipped up front in a way we don't normally see, right? Losing Conklin early in the game and coming into this, it would have been better if he hadn't even played. Because then at least you have a baked in plan for how to help out your right tackle. But now when you do it midstream, they have Hance, Blake Hance, one on one. Is that his name? Yes. They have Blake Hance. It is. And he's been great in the run game, by the way. He is there. They've been able to run the ball consistently, even with him in the game for the last couple weeks when Wills has been out or when Conklin's been out. He's been very good there. But he can't block TJ Watt one on one. And that's not his fault. But having to kind of adjust to that in the middle of the game is difficult. That came up a couple times. The Steelers' interior of their defensive line was awesome today. Like Chris Wormley and guys like that. Obviously, Hayward's a great player, but just the amount of control they had where they're playing head up, controlling guys, not allowing any movement side to side. It was very, very hard for the Browns to run in this game. Yep. And when you're not winning up front and when your passing game is as lifeless and stagnant as theirs tends to be, you run out of advantages. And I think that's exactly what we saw today. And the reason I want to talk about this and the reason I kind of back to this is I just don't know what they do now. Like what is the path out of here this season? Because our expectations for them were so high coming into the year and it just feels so hard for them right now.
It does. I just want to speak real quick about like the adjusting stuff. Like when you're, this is why a guy like being banged up and then going out and you have to play your backup. And then like when you put a game plan together and you're playing a game plan together against a defensive end, especially that could truly wreck your game on offense, like a TJ Watt. When I was with the Raiders, it was Von Miller. It's you have to put together every drop back pass and go like, okay, if we're doing a 5-step or a 7-step, we have to give chip help to the right tackle. Okay. We have to do the formations on your game plan. Will be left hash and right hash. Some are left hash only, some are right hash only. Some are like, we don't care. We can just run on either hash. But sometimes when you have a really, really, really good end, you can't get certain formations because it's an open side.
Yeah.
So also that guy gets out and it's like, oh man, well, we can't run that. And then sometimes the play caller just was like, oh, he totally forgets. And it's just like, oh, that's right. Conklin's out. I totally forgot, guys. I forgot to bring chip help over there, blah, blah, blah. It's just extra effort everybody has to make. And that's what it does. That's what good players do on other teams to you on offense or defense. But this offense, it's all the negatives from last year. It's just like almost like it's like times five now. It's like they're bad. It looks even worse now. It's every time they drop back when there's not that play action, it's not some half roll shot play. Or anything where it requires some high low over the middle. It is everything's a one and done read. And it's not like where it's a one and done read where it's like, okay, here comes some fun creation. It's like panic time.
It's so panicky.
Watching Big Ben and Baker today was like, this is not fun. Quarterback.
It's crazy how different it felt watching Mike White compared to watching Baker Mayfield. And that is so terrifying.
It's like, it's plant. There's breaking contain and being chaotic like a Josh Allen, but it's like planned chaos. It's organized chaos where it's like he's still in control. Like he's understanding, okay, this is what I'm doing. I'm still on a clock and he's worked to get to that.
He's also a supernova of talent.
But that's why, hey, big athletes, man. But that's the thing with a Baker. He comes out. It's like his head's going every which way. The ball's getting pumped 15 yes. times and he's not athletic enough to do that. And the fact that he hasn't realized what his own ceiling is, self-awareness is such a skill. Knowing how you win as a player is such an ability mentally and physically, just knowing that. And the fact that he doesn't understand that's not what I am with a banged up shoulder on top of that. It's like, come on, man. Like, you gotta get that clock churning, but get in the playbook and understand what's 1-2 on this play, because it's just, everything seems so panicky as soon as the training wheels come off, which is scary.
When things get muddy quickly for them, he starts to disintegrate. And that happened a lot today.
Yep.
96, whose name I don't know. I'm doing really bad with names today. 96 got like instant penetration on a couple pass plays. And as soon as it gets a little bit skittish, the play is over. Loudermilk had a really nice play. Just random guys
Go
are making plays for our man. No idea where he went to college, are making plays for that Steelers defense. And just little tiny things today, like Beckham getting a little bit of alligator arms on that ball over the middle of the field.
He does that.
Njoku had some really rough moments as a run blocker today. And they just can't have that. They cannot have those slip ups because their margin for error right now is so, so small.
Yep.
And so it's
a reflection on their quarterback though. Like, yes. You know what I mean? Like we watched the Chargers and watching how hard that Chargers offense seems today, you see Justin Herbert make three free runners miss and then get a ball off. And it turns in from a 10-yard sack to a first down. And it's like, that's because that's what Justin Herbert can do. And that's what having a big athletic quarterback, that they can do those things. They create something when it's hard. The Browns offense has to be perfect for Baker. And it's like, but that's the thing. It's hard to be perfect every single play. But that's what he's making them do.
Especially against a team with really good talent. And that's really well coached on the defensive side of the ball. Yes. The one play where Watt's sack that he had, he might have more than one, but the one that I remember, they did try to chip him. Johnson was over to that side. Oh, he spun inside so quickly that the running back didn't even touch him.
Yep.
And there's nothing you could do about that. No. You're counting for it and you still can't do anything
about
it.
The right tackle was setting slow because he knows he has outside chip help. So he's setting slow and he still got beat inside. It was like, yeah, that's just a talent gap right there.
Yeah, that guy's an alien from another planet. Yep. So where are you at on the Steelers right now? Because it just feels like their defense is going to be able to keep doing this for them. And I just have zero faith in their ability to move the ball. And you can only win so many games 15-10 when Jarvis Landry fumbles at the end and you probably could have lost a bunch of different times.
The fact that the score was 15-10. Oh, yeah. They ran the fake kick. Boswell got his smoked on it. Oh, man.
The history of specialists getting lit up in in Steelers-Browns games is storied at this point. Punters getting kicked in the face.
Yeah.
Kickers getting lit up on fake field goals.
No specialists are safe in those AFC North battles, man. It's like everybody, it's the new black and blue division, man. It's like even the kickers and punters are fair game. But I think as the Steelers as a whole, it's kind of, it's much as I love their defense, it's just always just going to be like, I see Big Ben just being Big Ben. And it's just, I can't.
Checking down 2-point conversions.
Dude, what was that? Just sail it. Hit the crossbar. Play a game with yourself.
It was incredible.
Hit the crossbar.
It was absolutely incredible.
Like in like 1.5 seconds too.
Zero downside. And just checking it down.
Just
10 yards short of the sticks on a 2-point conversion.
So how am I on the Steelers? Yeah, right there. That play is how I am with the Steelers. It's like they're feisty. Their defense is going to like kick some ass this year. Like their defense is legitimately fun to watch. It's just that as long as Big Ben's back there, they are limited.
One other thing I wanted to mention, the Browns on fourth down this year, it has been nightmarish.
Yeah.
They are 7 of 17. I think they're 7 of 18 on fourth down this year after this game. They're 23rd in EPA per play on fourth down. They go for it as much as any other team in the league. They've been miserable on fourth down this year. And I think it's starting to make them a little bit apprehensive about it because they had a 4th-and-1 from midfield and they took a delay game and punted. You did not see that from them over the first 7 weeks of the season. He has been steadfast about committing to, we're going to do this. We're going to keep going for it. And I think not getting that 4th-and-1 early in the game, Bryant, they had it blocked up. They had Bryant as a fullback in the backfield. Yeah. He was leading up on the linebacker, just completely whiffs. Should have been an easy like 1 or 2 yard gain. keep going, drive, and he just totally, and that's what happened today. They just had so many plays like that where it's Njoku missing a block or Bryant missing a block or Jarvis Landry dropping a ball or just a ball off of Rashard Higgins' hands. It just feels hard for them right now.
We talk about what good teams and bad difference. They're not a bad team, but difference between a good team stepping up is those role players. Those role players step up. And not only are they're at least average or net neutral, when they're those role players are negatives, and it's okay, one or two can be because there's a bunch of role players on your team. But when you need those role players to be positives, and if they're negatives for you, that's when it's like, oh boy, that's really hard. Cause then it requires your stars to step up. And then you look at this Browns team, you're like, who are the stars on offense? Other than, you know, of course, Nick Chubb, but
that's but it though. Like, I mean, he is the only guy on that offense playing like a star. Yeah. And I think that's a really big deal.
It is.
When you have other teams in the AFC and other teams just period that have like the Titans, for example, right? Yeah. The Titans have real star power at several different spots, and it just doesn't feel like the Browns have that right now. They don't have an AJ Brown, and I think that we could see some changes for them in their wide receiver spots. I think that's what could be coming because the way that things are currently constructed right now, it's expensive and it is not really working.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
The Athletic Football Show is sponsored by BetterHelp. A lot of us spend our lives wishing we had more time. The question is, time for what? If time was unlimited, how would you use it? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to know what's important to you and to make it a priority. Therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/maze today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/MAYS.
You guys talk about being students of the game. I am the f-ing game, JR.
All right. It's time to decide who's got the belt for week 8. This was a hard one. There weren't many clear options. I'm going to give it to Amari Cooper because he made two monster plays at the end of that game from the Titans or from the Cowboys. And I don't know if they win that game without either of those catches. And I think it's an indication that this team has, again, star power on it. Even without Dak Prescott, they have a guy like that where it's like, all right, you know what? Our receiver is going to take over in the most important moments of this game. And they win a game they probably shouldn't have won with their backup quarterback, and now they just keep on rolling.
I can't believe I just keep peeking at that score as we were getting ready, and I was just like they're still in it.
Yeah.
Cowboys are just still in it. I just kept peeking like a couple minutes, watching a game. I was like, oh wow. And I had the game muted for a minute as I was typing stuff up, and I was like, oh my God, they're about to win. And it was Amari dunking on him in the red zone. And
that's exactly what it was. He dunked on him. That is I'm just gonna go up and get this ball. It was an incredible play.
It was like he knew he was gonna do a pre-snap. He was like, I'm dunking on you right after, like as this play is about to break. And with Amari this year, it happened a little bit last year. It was almost like this belt could go on to CD Lamb as well, or like a tag team titles with those two, because what they're doing with Amari, kind of using him as a Z going inside and out. And Amari's
it's
on the
about
all
time.
Yeah. Right. But Amari's on the all, he's on the, you don't realize how big he is squad. Like we're going to have a good name for it.
Taller than you think All-Stars.
Bigger than you think All-Stars. Cause he just has the size. The fact that he's like
he was top five pick,
his former first round pick who just got this big deal, like all of a sudden he's willing to scrap and block now. It just speaks to what this Cowboys offense is, because it's just a whole bunch of stars that are playing role playing for each other, which is, I mean, they go supernova, and that's just That's not even talking about their offensive line. Not even talking about Zeke, Tony Pollard, their two tight ends who are playing awesome.
Ooh, also that heavy person that lining up Lyle Collins and McGovern in the backfield today. It's what I like to see.
Gotta love it.
Huge win for them. Later in the week, we're going to talk with Vikings because I think we probably should have a Vikings conversation after that game. Yeah. We also are going to talk more about the Eagles. We didn't talk about that game at all today. Ben Solak is going to come on the mailbag tomorrow. So we're obviously going to do a lot of Eagles chatter. So please send in your questions either by email at athleticfootballshow@gmail.com or give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 872-222-7073. The other thing I wanted to mention the name of number 96 on the Steelers because I felt bad. His name is Isaiah Bugs. I'm very upset that I did not remember that. He had a couple nice moments today. So just wanted to shout that out. He deserved it. The entire Steelers front deserved it. So I wanted to give them their proper due. As always, guys, we really appreciate you guys listening. Please check back this week. Again, we will record the mailbag tomorrow. That'll be running on Tuesday with Ben. We'll have Mitchell Schwartz for you this week. Bill Barnwell is going to be coming on the show on Wednesday to do a mid-season sort of check-in. So please come back and check all of that out. In the meantime, please rate and review the podcast on your podcast platform of choice. I would sincerely appreciate that. Please subscribe to The Athletic. It's theathletic.com/football show. Please go check out Nate's Substack, Silent Count. He's doing something every single week that is worth reading. If you are not reading that, I highly encourage you to do it. For now, we're going to say goodnight. Appreciate you guys listening. Happy Halloween. We'll talk to you later.
This was The Athletic Football Show.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.